digital has a profound place in people's discipleship. Because here's the thing, if you're consuming podcasts or news shows consistently, they are discipling you. That's not neutral content. You are taking in information and it is shaping your view of the world. It's shaping your view of yourself. It's shaping your view of God. And if you're not taking in content that's helping you actually recalibrate yourself to Jesus, you're going to be discipled in a different direction. You'll begin to be apprenticed by Tucker Carlson or the New York Times or whatever it is that you are constantly taking in.
Welcome to the Church Digital Podcast. Through this podcast, we'll talk about the technological innovations within the church. But more than tech for tech itself, we'll address deeper questions. Is disciple making possible digitally? How should we approach the digital mission field? Can a biblically grounded church operate in digital space? Oh, and where does the metaverse fit into all this? Whether you're a big or small church, an established church, or a startup church plant, the Church Digital's goal is to help churches like yours learn to be a multiplying church, digitally and physically. Our heart? That churches like yours will discover a newfound focus on disciple-making that will revolutionize your church. And now, here's your host, Jeff Reed.
All right. Hey, welcome to the Church Digital Podcast. Jeff here, founder of the Church Digital, Digital Church Network, and the guy who really likes to work with digital churches. And so looking forward to this conversation today. I met a guy on Twitter and we didn't hate each other immediately, unlike, you know, so much else of what happens on Twitter. And so I brought him into a conversation and really looking forward to where this is going, because it's like whenever you meet somebody on Twitter, you never really know where it's going to go. And so this may be the greatest podcast ever. Or maybe a giant train wreck. But either way, you will enjoy what's going to come from this conversation today. So, hey, I want to bring into the conversation, and I joke, this is going to be awesome. I'm bringing in Patrick Miller into the conversation. Patrick, thank you for joining us on the podcast today.
Thanks so much for having me. You know, it's going to be good when a podcast starts with, I met a guy on Twitter.
Pretty much. And it happens. It does happen. The people I meet on Twitter, those podcasts do typically end up being good, except for the one guy, but we're not going to talk about that one now. You have to go back through all the episodes and find it yourself. So, hey, listen, so Patrick wears a lot of different hats, works with the Gospel Coalition. He is digital relationships pastor, among other things, with the Crossing Church in Missouri. And dude said something on Twitter and immediately I was like, I want to talk to that guy and want to unpack this. But before we get into the tweet, can I say the tweet? I'm gonna stick with it. Before we get into the tweet, the Twitter tweet comment, Patrick said something. He finished writing a book, Truth Over Tribe. And so that published in October. Patrick, why don't you just briefly give us a synopsis of what the book is?
Yeah, so the book really has nothing to do with technology. There is one chapter, though, in it about Facebook and, well, I should say Meta and Google and how that's changed our political discourse. But the book in general is about how political division is dividing the church and that Jesus wants us to be united on what we share in common, which is, of course, his death and his resurrection. We don't argue in the book that there isn't a place for politics. We think that's part of loving your neighbor in the world. And yet we also think that the way we talk about politics has become incredibly toxic. And so it's a really practical conversational book trying to help people to de-tribalize, to leave behind their political ideological identities and instead focus, as the subtitle says, not giving your allegiance to the donkey or the elephant, but instead giving that deep allegiance to the lamb.
It's interesting. I'm going to be completely honest. I am scared. I am like petrified about having political conversations in digital space. You won't see me do it. And I love the idea of truth over tribe. You know, I just even in my own, this is my own personal theology. It's nothing to do with the Church Digital or anything else. It's just, I really don't like getting into political conversations because, you know, especially in 22, 23 social media, I just have seen this explode where all of a sudden different people are arguing about different things and none of it has anything to do with the kingdom. And so like for me, politics almost feels like it's the great distraction of the 2020s where it's taking us away from maybe some of the things that God would rather us be. So here, I'm asking the author, I'm inviting the author into this conversation. Like I want you to, whether it's helping me correct me in this, but the question that I struggle with is I want to be apolitical. Like, I don't want anything to do with that space, especially how it drips in the digital. So correct me here, guide me here, reshape me here. What do I need to do? Is it completely apolitical? Should I be more political? Like, help me understand what my role is.
Well, I have to say, politics is subsuming everything. And so there's a lot of people out there who would suggest that if you want to be apolitical, or if you want to avoid political conversations, there's something wrong with you. Or maybe it's just because you're privileged, and so your life's working out well, and so you don't have to worry about things like politics. And while I suppose there might be some good things to think about in that critique, I don't think that every person's call is to be highly engaged in politics and political discourse. And to be frank, I think the average American who's interested in politics isn't actually engaged in politics. They're engaged in political hobbyism. This is where you are focused on what's happening in the horse race in Washington, D.C. You're always, you know what's happening on the federal level, but you aren't engaged on a local level. You aren't caring for the widow, for the refugee, for the homeless in your own local community. And I think that's where real politics actually happens, because it's a place where you have the most influence. Now, as far as talking about politics online goes, I do it all the time. So clearly I don't have a problem with doing it, but I don't expect everybody else to do that. I think there's a place for it. And I think the manner in which we do it matters. God doesn't need a bunch of jerks for Jesus out there dunking on people on Twitter.
Jerks for Jesus dunking on people on Twitter. Oh my gosh. Okay. All right. So Patrick, that's a tattoo worthy comment right there. I have this thing that if quotes are so good, is it's good enough that I would tattoo it on my body with the name of the person who said it? And you right now have made the short list. Jerks for Jesus dumping on people on Twitter. So good. Well, Patrick, thank you for that. Be sure, we'll put a link in the show notes to get the book. And so if you're interested in more information on the book, this podcast is not about the book, but if you're interested in more information on Truth Over Tribe, follow the link in the show notes and grab it. Patrick, thank you for that. I appreciate the heart and the correction diving into this. Okay, so let's get into what we want to talk about here, because the conversation is centered around content and discipleship. He tweeted, we'll put a link in the show notes. By the way, this is like, I'm not going to read the whole series, but it was a series of tweets, maybe 13, 14 deep. It's long-winded. It was good. But basically, discipleship, quote unquote, this is one tweet. Discipleship is face-to-face. Correction, parts of discipleship. Annually, our church produces 365 podcast episodes, 100 blog posts, 100 plus newsletters, 100 plus videos. It's changing lives and energizing discipleship in profound ways. And then he goes into series to describe how he does it. So what I found fascinating about this, and Patrick, what I want to dig into, is you're a digital relationship guy. And so much of the world, when we talk about discipleship, we talk about it being relational. And actually, I was shocked when I saw the tweet talking about, hey, here's content that we use for a discipleship. And then on top of that, the content has nothing to do with the Sunday morning sermon. It was kind of like the 1-2 punch that you're not just using a relationship, you're using content, and it's not Sunday morning content, it's other stuff. So maybe start to unpack for me kind of what was the mindset, what was the genesis as you were creating this tweet and then the series of posts following?
Well, I think there's a lot of people out there who have a strong partition between what discipleship is and what you do online. And for them, discipleship is exclusively something that happens to face-to-face. So maybe that's a Sunday morning worship in a church. Maybe that's a small group. Maybe that's a one-to-one meeting with someone. That's where they think discipleship takes place. And I think that those things are all important and they all do have a place. But I don't think that that's the exclusive domain of discipleship. I think that discipleship is far more holistic and involves far more than just what happens in relationship with someone when you see them face-to-face. And by the way, I think part of this is ridiculous. So I think about my wife, her closest friends, they all love Marco Polo. It's this little app where you like take a video of yourself and you send it to someone, then they send one back. And it's almost kind of replaced phone conversations for millennials like me, who, especially women who want to see each other talking. And her closest friends, that's how they keep up. And she'll tell me all the time, she's like, I know what's happening in their lives because of digital technology. It's not putting a barrier up in our relationship. relationship. It's deepening our relationship. And when we get together, it's not weird when we see one another. It doesn't create some bizarre dynamic like, I don't really know who you are. And I think that you can draw that principle out in so many other digital spheres, whether it's text threads or you're engaging with on Twitter or Facebook. There's so many different places where we both build relationships, but also to the point of content where we're deepening our understanding of Jesus and our love for him. And I think that if you think about discipleship as being holistic, you cannot exclusively put it into in-flesh meetings. And I don't think anyone is consistent with that. And I would sit down with them and I would challenge them, like, okay, put away your text, put away your phone, put away, stop using it because it all doesn't count anymore. You know, and they'd say, well, that's ridiculous. I go, yes, you're being ridiculous. That's why that's a problem.
It's beautiful. Now, we've said the word discipleship, I don't know, 15 times already in this conversation. So let's back up here a little bit because, you know, I have a running joke. If you line up 10 pastors and ask them what discipleship is, you'll get like 12 different answers, different takes along the way with that. So maybe help me here, right up front here, and let's define. What do you define? What is your church? What is the Crossing define discipleship as?
Yeah, that's a great question. And when I think about the gospel that is most about discipleship, I would go to the Gospel of Matthew because it's the one where it shows a lot of the conversations that Jesus actually has with his disciples. And of course, the gospel ends with him telling those disciples, go therefore and make disciples of the nations. And that word, the Greek word is mathetes, which just means learner. I would actually prefer the word apprentice personally over discipleship because that's what discipleship is all about. It's about apprenticing yourself to Jesus. And apprenticing yourself to Jesus is a holistic task. It means I learn to speak like Jesus. I learn to walk in the way of Jesus. I learn to have the practices of Jesus. I learn to think like Jesus. And there's so many different ways in our walk with Jesus that we're going to be discipled. And again, I think digital has a place, especially when it comes to the learning aspect. Digital has a profound place in people's discipleship. Because here's the thing, if you're consuming podcasts or news shows consistently, they are discipling you. That's not neutral content. You are taking in information and it is shaping your view of the world. It's shaping your view of yourself. It's shaping your view of God. And if you're not taking in content that's helping you actually recalibrate yourself to Jesus, you're going to be discipled in a different direction. You'll begin to be apprenticed by Tucker Carlson or the New York Times or whatever it is that you are constantly taking in.
Well, let me ask this, because when we talk about the discipleship, you know, I read books like, The Other Half of Church, Michael Hendricks, Jim Wilder. I don't know if you're familiar with that one. It's a book came out maybe within the past year, but it dives into the brain science about how so much of what we're doing with discipleship, the content model didn't work. And actually our brain operates more with it being in community. And that's where like I'm surprised the what I'm seeing. And even when you told me before the show, hey, my role is actually a digital relationships guy. When your church is doing digital discipleship, what's the role of content? What's the role with relationships? Like, how do you get the balance? Is it 50-50, 60-40? Like, what does this thing operate between the content and the relationships?
Well, of course, that's going to depend person to person and how they're engaging with what we're doing as a church. For better or for worse, I think most people approach their churches kind of consumeristically. You know, we come in asking, what are the services that you have to offer me? And what on the menu am I going to try and taste? And I don't think that's probably the best way to orient yourself towards church, if we're going to be honest, but that's how the average person does it. And so, you know, what we do as a church is we have all kinds of in-person opportunities for people to build relationships, whether that's through small groups or that's on Sunday mornings or elsewhere. And so we have those offerings. And yet on the other side, we realize that people are thinkers. And so that means that we do need to give them good content. Now, part of what we do with content is start conversations. Because if you both listen to the same podcast or you both download the same video, now you have an opportunity to get together and dialogue about it and engage with it. And I think beyond that, on a digital level, we try to be really intentional about building relationships with our listeners online. So I have a lot of people who are engaging with the podcast that I do, who are talking to me on Twitter, and we DM with one another. And I'm not saying that it's the exact same thing as being face to face with them, but in a lot of ways, I've gotten to be a pastor to them. I'd say probably once or twice a week, I'm helping someone find a church in their local area because they haven't found a church to be connected to. I'm giving them advice on how to deal with a problem in their marriage. And that's all happening. That's all being mediated by digital technology. And so I don't think that content is everything. I think a content exclusive model is always going to be a mistake, but I don't think that content is nothing.
It's interesting. You've literally producing a podcast episode every day of the year. Like, is that how I'm reading this? 365 podcasts a year?
Yes. Yes.
What, help me map me out like what this stuff is. Because I'm assuming there's nuances, there's contextualization, you're reaching different people, there's some strategy behind this. So walk me through 40,000 foot level. What are y'all doing?
Yeah, so we didn't wake up one day and said, let's have a podcast for every day of the year.
Yeah, it's not like the first 10 minutes of the sermon, just breaking it up piece by piece, right? There's got to be something more.
No. And to be honest with you, and we could have this conversation, I think that Sunday morning centric, sermon centric digital ministries, in my view, make a slight mistake. But I'll set that aside for just a moment. What we did was we started identifying needs in our congregation. So it started with realizing that we had a lot of people who wanted to spend time in the Bible, but didn't know how to do it. They didn't know where to start. They didn't know how to apply it to their lives. We said, let's start a little podcast where we release two 10-minute devotionals on Bible passages. And we'll just go through books of the Bible and do little devotionals. And slowly over time, we started adding in new hosts and adding in frequency. And so that's one of our podcasts, 10-minute Bible talks. And it's been incredibly successful. I mean, I think we average something like 300,000 downloads a month. And that's obviously across the country. We don't have that many people in our church. But then we started identifying other needs. For example, we knew that there was a lot of women in their 20s in our church who were trying to navigate their early 20s. I'm out of college. I'm working my first job. Maybe I just got married. How do I do this? And this is where you have to have the priesthood of all believers. We identified people in our church who were good communicators. They're not on staff. They're not pastors. They're just two women who love to talk about life and are deep thinkers. And we said, hey, why don't you put together a little podcast that deals with the topics that women in their 20s are asking? And so that became another one. Another one of our pastors is really into prayer and meditation, meditative prayer. And so again, we realized there's a lot of people struggling with anxiety and they're interested in meditation. So guess what we did? We started a podcast for it. We started one for our counseling ministry. We realized that politics and culture were an issue and that people were being discipled by the news media. So we started one on that topic. So what we essentially did, if you catch it, was we found needs. We came up with an idea to meet the need digitally in terms of content. And then we found and located people inside of our church who could speak to those needs. And then we began to produce the content. So it's not as though there's one podcast with an episode coming out every day. No, we have a whole kind of backlog of podcasts that are doing different things for different people that are speaking to different felt needs that hopefully address where they're at in their walk with Jesus right now.
Do you have like more ideas? Are people coming to you with ideas? Like what would a new podcast, what would that process look like if you were doing something different?
Oh yeah. I mean, this definitely happens all the time. For example, we have another couple in our church who has a neighboring ministry. So these are people who are really intentional about getting to know their neighbors. They live in a suburb and kind of becoming a hub for relationship and community in their neighborhood. And so they've practiced this for years and they have an incredible talent for neighboring and they have all of these ideas and skills that they can teach people to do. They even wrote a book on the topic. And so I was talking with them and they're, again, good communicators. And I said, you guys need to turn this thing into a podcast. So that's often how it goes is you're talking with someone, they already have the itch. They already have the need. I see a problem. And it's right. That's a sweet spot. When someone identifies a problem and they want to help fix the problem and solve the problem, that's exactly the kind of person who you can bring in and start having create content. I mean, assuming that they're creative, good communicators, or skills that have to be present for people to be able to do a podcast. But that's often how it goes is, again, we find a problem, we find someone who has a heart for the problem and who has the right skills, and then we equip them. We know how to do it. We have the system down. So we make it super easy for these people. They just show up and do their thing and leave.
Yeah, I love this because you're finding people that are passionate about this and you're helping them develop a voice to multiply those ideas into others. Like what, I'll just keep flowing here. Like what training? So you've got a couple, maybe they're charismatic, you know, this neighboring group. Have they ever done anything with podcasts? Do they even know how to spell podcasts? Like What are you helping them do to get started?
Yeah, so we have a pretty well-established process. When we bring someone on with the idea of starting a podcast, we begin with what I call target personas. And this is pretty normal marketing speak. We identify and we literally create little one-page documents describing who their target listeners are. And we make them like real people. Like, this is Ben and this is Tom. And we describe where they're at in life, what they do, what their education is, what their fears are, what they're interested in, what questions they have. And we do that because one of the hard things in a podcast is that it's a one-way conversation. And it's really important to keep the person that you're talking to in view so that you're not just talking to yourself. So we begin there. And once we have a target persona laid out, that's actually when we move more into kind of the titling and branding and brainstorming of what the different episodes could be. That's when we get into that phase of ideation. Because again, if you don't know who your audience is, your branding and everything you put together is not going to hit the right target. And by the way, if your goal is just for you to become famous or a celebrity, that's in my mind, not very worthwhile. I'm not interested in it. If your goal is to help people, then I want to help you. And that's, again, why starting with the audience, you want to help people. So you got to start with them. Once we get that down, we get them into our, we have a little studio space now, but we haven't. I mean, this is brand new. So we've done this largely without having anywhere to record. But we just developed a really simple system for how people could record things. And what we actually have them do is record probably 3 or 4 test episodes. We tell them to send it out to kind of their key essential people, get feedback on it. And they use that feedback then to change the format of the podcast. And frankly, just to learn, to figure out how do we talk on the podcast. And those episodes never get released. It's just kind of practice. And of course, I listen to those and I give them feedback and kind of help coach them. I mean, part of podcasting, and you know this, is your first, you know, 100 episodes aren't going to be great. that's not going to be your best. You get better over time. And so that's where we just try to coach people and help encourage them. And then on the back end, like, we're really strategic about actually marketing these podcasts, making sure that people in our church know that they exist, making sure that people outside our church see that they're out there. And so that's kind of the whole package of what we do to go from idea to execution.
This is incredible. I was not expecting this conversation coming out of this, but what you've done is, you know, we talk about here on the show a lot, the greatest resource the church has is literally sitting in the pews. We've just got to figure out how to tap into it. And you're doing that. You're platforming others, helping them do what they feel like God is calling them to do, and multiplying those ideas into others so that other people within the church can follow suit. How did you get there? Like, this is not something that happens quickly. There's multiple levels of culture here. One, you've got to be okay doing something other than Sunday morning. You've got to be okay empowering other people. You've got to be okay with failure or lack of connection or people walking away. Like, there's not, your typical church couldn't pull some of this off. How did you get to this point?
Yeah, I mean, part of it is our church culture. We have a few values. One of them is agility, the ability to move swiftly into new things and accept change and to not be resistant to change. Another one is extreme ownership, which is the notion that when I'm doing something, I see myself as an owner of it. And that goes to our last value, which is excellence, doing things well, making sure that things are executed at a high level. And so back in 2019, when we started our first podcast, I mean, we haven't been doing this for that long in terms of years. It was agility. It was saying, hey, we want to reach people in between Sundays. We don't want church to just be something that you show up for one day a week and then it checks out on you. It's almost a parish model. You know, back in the day, a pastor could walk around to people's houses and workplaces and check in on them. And that's what I see podcasts as. It's kind of like a little parish where you get to be a part. And people tell me this all the time. They're like, hey, I was out running on the trail yesterday listening to you, and that was a great episode. And that's the funny thing. Like, that's the relational side is, yes, I wasn't having a conversation with them, but they felt like I was. They feel like I'm a part of their life. And I love that. I think that's really lovely. But again, we had agility. And then obviously COVID hit in 2020. And because our team had already been working on some of this digital stuff, we just as a church really reallocated resources and people so that we could focus more of our actual man hours on digital content. And that was a major shift. That was a financial shift. That was a big risk. But in the end, it's really paid off for us because we've realized that using this digital technology, we're able to reach a tremendous amount of people. I mean, just put a number on it. We lost about 30% of our church during COVID, which is pretty standard for most in-person churches. Since then, though, we've added an additional 40%. And that's largely been through our online content, the stuff that we've used. And these are people in our local town. We're not in a big town. This is a town of 150,000 people. But we've added an additional 40% into our church. Now, a lot of these people are baby Christians. They're new to their faith. So it's a different kind of person maybe than that left initially. But that's... To me, this is why it's so important. It's because we're in a post-Christian culture. And in a post-Christian culture, the expectation that someone's just going to walk inside your church and they've never done that before in their life, are you insane? Especially with social anxiety the way it is. Like, when's the last time you walked into a building that had some sort of participative element and you had never done it before? Like, we don't do that. People don't go into spaces that they're uncomfortable in. So again, we're just using digital as an on-ramp to becoming more connected to the church.
All right. So actually, one of my next questions was going to be the post-Christian, because you mentioned that in the thread as well. It's interesting. When I say things like the United States is in a post-Christian environment, that's next to churches operating in virtual reality. That's probably one of the more offensive things that I tend to say, just because people balk at that idea so much. But you're openly talking about that. Unpack that for me. Like, why do you think the United States is currently operating post-Christian? And how does that, what are other examples of how that affects your ministry?
Yeah, I'll go so far to say, I don't think it, I know it. So I'll offend people worse by making it a factual statement. We actually, on our digital team, funded the most expansive study of de-churching that's yet been done in the United States. There's a book that'll be coming out in a few years exploring this, but I'll give you the down low early on. So your listeners are kind of getting in on a secret here.
Boom.
We are going through the largest religious shift in American history, period. And for the first time in American history, it's not a move toward the church, it's a move away from the church. Something around 40% of Americans who have previously been involved with church have de-churched over the last decade. In other words, they have stopped walking with Jesus, they've stopped connecting with their faith, they aren't doing anything Christian in their lives. Add to that Gen Z, our youngest generation, the majority of them now have grown up outside of church. They haven't been to a church in their life. And that's because their parents were the ones de-churching. So their parents de-churched, they didn't take them to church. And so they have no church experience. So we are now hitting the point where the majority of Americans really have no connection with church. Maybe they would self-identify as Christian, but again, the rise of the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, not N-U-N-S, the rise of the nuns tells us that this number of people who don't identify as anything, they're not atheists, they're not Christian, they're not Buddhist. It is the fastest growing demographic in America. And so by every statistical measure, Christianity is vastly shrinking. And again, this is the largest religious shift in American history. So when I say that this is a post-Christian culture, I'm talking about sociological fact, not my opinion of where we're at as a culture. I mean, you have a whole different conversation about how cultural mores around sex and sexuality and gender. I mean, there's so many other areas that we could get into to say, see, we're moving away from kind of a traditional Christian way of seeing the world. Now, I'm not necessarily mourning that. It's not as though there's been a golden age in America where everybody was Christian, everything was right. You know, people look back at the 50s, oh, that was great. I'm like, well, it's great if you weren't a black person. I mean, there's never been a great time in American history to just be a Christian. But because people aren't used to being in church, it has to change how we engage them. We aren't dealing with, this is not Billy Graham doing a crusade to a bunch of people who've been in church their whole life. We are living in a different moment.
So is your response then empower individuals and lean more on individual personal evangelism? Is your response moving outside of the, because you're a physical church, moving outside the physical church walls and moving more towards a community pastor instead of a campus pastor? Like, I don't disagree with the words that you're saying. And it's interesting. I just read a stat, something out of England. You know, we're doing this recording in December in England, which is a post-Christian environment. There are more people that are going to pubs for Christmas Eve than are going to a Christmas Eve church service. So we're seeing what life looks like in post-Christian environments. We're seeing, hey, you know what? We're not that far away here in America. Maybe what's some practical pivots or things that you're wrestling with on doing ministry in post-Christian?
Yeah, I mean, I think the answer is going to be holistic. I think what you just said, that we're going to need a community and we're going to need one-to-one evangelism is a key critical factor in the conversation. But I think moving beyond just community, there's a place for digital. And that's the topic that we're talking about. So I want to sit there for a second. Well, here's what's interesting about those de-churched people. the vast majority of them did not leave angry. They didn't leave because they stopped believing something. They just stopped. They just stopped showing up. And the vast majority of them are open to coming back to church. They're very open. They just need an invitation. And I think this is where both the one-to-one, and there's different scales of this. Like there's some people, it's going to take a lot of relationship before they will ever step into a church. But there's also a different subset of people that it's not going to take a lot of relationship. They just need an invitation. And to me, digital content is one of the best ways to invite people on two levels. One, if you're listening to digital content and there's someone you want to have come be a part of your church, it's a lot easier to send them a podcast or a video and say, hey, this made me think of you. I'd love to talk with you about it than it is to say, hey, come with me on Sunday morning to church. But number two, using marketing and essentially target audiences on Meta's platform and Google's platform, we've gotten rather good at targeting people who aren't in church. And all we have to do is give them, we've used email marketing to do this as well, but we just have to give them a little bit of content that helps them warm up to us to where they're not even coming to our church, but they begin to think about us as, hey, this is someone who's adding to my life spiritually. This is someone who is kind of pastoring me right now. And that becomes the on-ramp down the road. Maybe it's a year later or 2 years later that they come. In fact, using our email marketing, what we've discovered is about 10% of the new contacts that we gather will show up in person in the next year. And so if we can gather 1,000 contacts, that's 100 people. This year, we're going to gather around 9,000 contacts. That's about 900 new people that are in our church. And it's not anything fancy. We were just offering them devotions. We're just saying, hey, come back to God. Don't you miss this? Wasn't your life better when you're with Jesus? Here's something really simple and easy for you to reconnect with God. And again, that eventually leads them to walking inside those doors.
Yeah, it's something that's, I mean, that's a low-tech solution, right? I mean, you're emailing a daily devotional through MailChimp or something. Super like this isn't TikTok. This isn't something crazy. It's no. Email. And that's interesting. 10%, which is a low number maybe, but nine thousand to get to 900. Like that's a significant footprint that you're able to move. You know what I love, Patrick? I love that you've got the stats that are backing up what you're doing. So many times we have these conversations like, There's qualitative but not quantitative. We can tell the stories, but we don't actually have the numbers that are matching it up. And you've got the numbers that are doing that. Is all this has been within your, like you said, 2018, 2019, so 3, 4, 5 years. That's how long you guys have been pushing digital where you are?
Yeah. So, I started in college ministry, then transitioned to leading a 20s ministry that was primarily focused on getting people in their 20s into small groups. And that had about 500 people involved. It was doing well, but obviously I wanted to reach more people. And this is probably 2017, 2018. And so I'm just thinking about millennials at the time and how do you reach millennials? And the answer was obvious. We need to reach them online. And so just as a part of that ministry, I started doing more online ministry and more online content. Like I said, we launched our first podcast in October of 2019, so not that long ago. Around that time, we made our first hire kind of in the digital space. Now, again, COVID really changed everything for us because a lot of our jobs disappeared all of a sudden while people were kind of living through the pandemic. There was no more in-person church. And when in-person church started back up, the church, because we're agile, said, hey, we're actually going to keep you guys on this digital stuff because this is changing lives and it's drawing people to Jesus. And we're not going to pull you out and make you go back to what you were doing before. Now, again, that's a cost, that's an investment. And we're a large church, so we have a little more freedom to make those kinds of decisions. But that's how it developed. It was just slowly over years trying strategies. And like you just said, we're very quantitative. We don't do things that are ineffective. So we've tried lots of ways of gathering content online. We just realized that email devotionals are by far the best one. They're really easy to do. There's nothing complicated about it. And we tried lots of complicated things. They didn't work. So we did the thing that works. And, isn't it great news that it's easy? And podcasting is really similar. People want to start a YouTube channel or do some video thing, but they have no videography experience. I'm like, why would you do that? You can just get behind a mic and no one has to see you. And you could reach thousands, tens of thousands, depending on your podcast, people with your content and help them draw closer to God.
That's fascinating. How do you know, as you've been developing all this stuff and developing the strategies, keep working the analytics, the measurements, trying different things, exploring different areas. How do you know if something's a win? Like, what are you looking for? How do you know if it's succeeding? Maybe what's an example of a failure, something you tried and it didn't work At what point did you pull the plug on it? Talk about some of these successes and failures with the processes you got.
Yeah. So, you know, this has a lot to do with our digital team. We set what are called lag measures and lead measures. So lag measures are kind of your long-term goals. We want to have X 100,000 downloads, right? That's our long-term goal. Lead measures are more immediate term goals that hopefully affect the lag measure in the long term. And so we run usually 6-week campaigns. These are little 6-week chunks where we'll focus on a theme. We'll have a particular target that we're trying to reach. And we'll have a short-term goal that we're trying to reach during that period. For example, we might say right now we're in the Christmas season. And so our goal is to get 3,000 people to subscribe to new contacts. So not total, just new contacts to subscribe to our Christmas newsletter, right? So that would be the goal. And then we create content, whether that's advertising content or blogs that point to the devotional. We create content that points people in that direction so that they will sign up for the Christmas devotional. And that's how we evaluate, did something work or did something not work, right? If we don't hit the goal or the target that we met, we can go back and evaluate, why didn't we hit it? Was this our fault or was this just a bad idea to start with? One great example of this for me, you said failures. In kind of the inbound marketing world, there's the idea of gated content. So this will be like PDFs that are behind paywalls, not literal paywalls. You're not paying money. You give your email contact and you get, you know, this 3-page document on how to pray the Lord's Prayer. You know, what we've discovered is that the vast majority of gated content, free gated content, doesn't actually generate contacts. And you can spend a lot of work creating these documents and literally no one will use it. And we had to discover that by repeatedly trying different ideas, different forms of gated content. We did things for parents and children. We did things for about every demographic you can imagine. And we just realized no one was interested. No one wanted to sign up for this. And the people who did sign up for it were people who were already consuming everything else that we did. So we weren't reaching new people with it. So again, that's just how we've evaluated. And my point here, by the way, is not to say that gated content is bad. I'm saying our team doesn't know how to do it. So we're not going to try to do it. We tried. We couldn't do it, right? Your team might be great at gated content and you might be able to make some amazing stuff. Awesome. Good for you. But you have to evaluate what your skills are and where you can be successful. And the only way to do that is by setting goals, measuring success throughout, evaluating why you did or didn't reach that goal, and making sure those goals are towards your long-term ends of what you want to accomplish as a ministry.
This is beautiful. This is so good. By the way, gated content works for us. So once again, it's not the technique. There's plenty of other stuff that doesn't work for us, but we've had some success with the gated content piece. Where are you going in 2023? Like as you're looking at the future, where you're going, is it more of the same? Is it adding new shows, new content? Is there a radical shift? Like what's the future look like for you?
Well, that's a great question. We've kind of started an internal organization called Endeavor, which is not so much about helping people inside of our local church create content. It's about identifying great content creators outside of our church and equipping them to reach wider audiences. I call it the anti-celebrity model because our goal is actually not to make a bunch of famous people. Our goal is to make what I call middle class creators, people who have a following of maybe 5,000 to 10,000 people. Now, why I say that number is because I find that once you break the 10,000 person threshold, your ability to build relationships with your audience decreases dramatically. At about 10,000 people, most people aren't going to want to talk to you who are engaging with you, but you'll have a subset who really want to have engagement and you can keep up with it. You can be a presence in their life. And so we don't really want to go beyond that. And so Endeavor, that's kind of our thing, is finding these creators and helping them, whether it's starting new things or take what they're already doing and level it up, reach more people with it because it's great content. And we want to help them reach more people. That's what we do there. The name of the game, though, just to be frank with you, and this is a word to all people in churches, data is everything. The battle is not for who can produce the best podcast. The battle is not between Christian organizations. The battle is between us and Disney, us and the Fox News Network, us and the New York Times. These organizations have collected massive amounts of data on people. They know what they like. They know what they're watching. They know what they're engaging with. And they're using that. They're feeding that into AI, into algorithms, into nodes of connected machines, which will then target their content to the right person. And this is how they're growing their subscription audiences. And so you have to understand that the most important asset you have as a podcaster or a church is your data. It's the information that you have on specific people. And if you can get good at collecting that data and cleaning up that data and using that data well so that you can target ads to those people inside your church using various ad platforms, you are going to have tremendous reach and tremendous success. And so that's really one of our big focal points. We are constantly collecting data. We don't do it in unethical ways. We abide by all the standards. This is not a kind of a no holds bar, take whatever you can approach. That's not what we're trying to do at all. But that's where we're going. I mean, the next year is really the year of more data collection for us.
Yes, I want to come back to the data, but Endeavor, what's the end game? So you're helping to create mid-level influencers, helping them grow in their influence. Are you trying to get people into the church building to reconnect with them? Are you trying to drive people to a asynchronous community for ongoing discipleship or relationship? Like what's the why behind Endeavor?
Well, I would want to say all the above. Endeavor is at its heart a missional organization. We want to reach people who are far from God. So when we're thinking about the kinds of people that we want to bring in, we're looking for people who aren't just talking to Christians. They're talking about topics or issues that have kind of a Venn diagram overlap with the interests of non-Christians. And that's because, again, we believe that the internet is a mission field. And so finding content creators who can cross the gap between Christian community and non-Christian communities is key to welcoming those people in. To your question of what's the end goal, I want to say all of the above. We would love to see more asynchronous communities. To be perfectly frank, we've never had a great level of success developing those things. But we're also developing some technology and strategies for helping people connect into local churches who are listening. For example, in podcasting, there's now the ability to do geofencing where you are targeting specific ads to specific geolocations. And so our hope is to partner with churches in major metropolitan areas and essentially advertise their church to anybody listening to our podcast in that metro area, because we've connected with them. We know who they are. We trust the church, and we can send people that way. And so, you know, that's just a handful of strategies, but that's our long-term goal. We want people who don't know Jesus to meet Jesus. And once they meet Jesus, we do want to help them move into community.
That's beautiful. I mean, I say that's beautiful a lot. That's like my stall phrase while I try to imagine like whatever the next question is I'm saying. That's my knee jerk. I'm going to confess right here on the show. But literally the words that you're talking about in either connecting into physical space, connecting into to an async or multiple asyncs like that. This is incredible. This is what's in, there's a handful of churches, by the way, Patrick, that are thinking the same way. We did a podcast with Seacoast. Maybe not that long ago, maybe a couple months at this point. I love this podcast. They literally listened to the 20-year-old intern. The 20-year-old intern came up with an idea. Hey, let's start to what you said. Let's start to find some mid-level influencers and connect them in. And then they got like thousands of people now in an async, and they're trying to figure out how to disciple people in Discord. I think they're in Discord. They were talking about moving into another platform. But it's beautiful to see churches that like yours that are now wanting to wrestle and explore a different idea. Like I want to bring it back and just have a whole conversation about what that looks like. This is a new organization for you in 23, something you're starting new?
So Endeavor launched in, let's see if I can get my dates right here. It launched in April of 2021. So we're about a year and a half into the organization. But we have a charter and we have a very well laid plan for where we're going. So in terms of the actual part of bringing content creators in and helping them be successful, that's kind of the last step on the line. We're very much in the tool building mode right now. We're developing the tools we need to help them be successful. And again, a huge part of that is data collection.
Awesome. So let's dig into the data piece. Because I could talk all day about the Endeavor. The data piece. I know Glue Insights was a thing and they've paused that Insights platform. Where are you pulling data from? This is like the advanced level conversation. We're going deep into here. Some of my audience is going to tap into this. Some of this are going to be like, no, thank you. But where are you pulling the data from when you're trying to figure out what's going on at the local level?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. So there's multiple sources. And let me just state this up front. I am not a data scientist. We have a data scientist on our team. Okay. So if there are data scientists listening to this and I say something that sounds wrong, it's because I'm not the data scientist. honest. My purview is a little bit higher level on it. So I understand how the system works. We draw on data from multiple sources. We, for example, I already talked about our devotionals. One of the best ways that we draw on data is just by getting people's names and email addresses. That's our currency. That's our gold. The thing that we want more than anything else is your name and your email address. Now, we have all of our websites integrated with HubSpot, but you can integrate them with really any CRM out there so that we're able to track what people are looking at, viewing on our website, which of course then begins to give us a picture of who is this person? What are they interested in? What are the topics that they read? What are the things that they spend a lot of time on? And you can track those things on HubSpot and you can create tags so that you're, again, you're essentially building a profile of who this individual is. And then you're able to take that contact information and plug it into Meta or into Google's ad platform. And you can, you can't really do direct targeting to grab that person, but you can create what are called lookalike audiences. And so let's say we've got a pile of 1,000 contacts who we know because of what they've looked at are highly interested in prayer. They're very interested in pieces on anxiety. They're very interested in Bible studies on the Gospel of Mark. I don't know, like let's just get a really narrow target. Well, we could then come up with a gospel study on the book of Mark that talks about prayers in Mark that focuses on anxiety. And we could create lookalike audiences and go reach more people who are just like them. Now, if those are successful and those people click on the link and they go fill out the form so that they can get the devotional, well, now we've gotten their information. But because we know where they're coming from, we know what they looked at, we know what they want, they're kind of coming with a pre-built profile from that point. And now you're beginning to get the idea of data is a flywheel. The more it's exponential in growth. When you only have 100 contacts in your database, that's useful. It's not nearly as useful as 1,000, and that's not nearly as useful as 10,000. Because the more contacts you have, the more you can compare and cross-analyze those people, and the better picture you have of the kinds of people that you're bringing in. So that's where we're drawing in a lot of our data and information.
Yeah. So when we've gone from podcasting to content to data to async, this has been a really good conversation. You have not been a train wreck. This has been, you know, considering a stranger on Twitter, like this has been a really good dive into the strategy that you guys are that are operating out of in Missouri. The lookalike audiences you're developing. Do you limit because you're a physical church? Do you limit based on physical location? Do you do discipleship digitally outside of the physical reach of the church? Like what's that limitation look like for you?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be on a case-by-case basis. And the kinds of content that we're targeting inside of our city versus outside of our city is oftentimes going to look quite different. If you're inside of Columbia, Missouri, where we live, and we reach you, we want you to come to the crossing. We want you to step inside our doors. If you're outside of Columbia, that's an expectation I can't have of you. You're not going to walk inside our doors. And yet that doesn't mean that this online content isn't going to be good for your walk with Jesus. And so when you think about those lookalike audiences, they're going to look different in a kind of local area than they do nationally. And we do both. I mean, we're reaching a national audience with our podcast and our content. And we also have a very local audience that we're reaching with it. But how we target them, the kinds of ads we create, they do look different.
This is great. So good. Man, I feel like I could just go on and ask more and more. And we're going to bring you back to talk about the async thing because that's just an area that I'm really intrigued by. But man, Patrick, thanks for being on here and thanks for starting to unpack some of this for us of the strategy centered on the role of content with discipleship. So, hey, as we're landing the plane here, any closing thoughts?
Oh man, I just want to say to your listeners and to you, I'm so grateful for Christians who are being creative and inventive. I think that's the spirit of, or the image of the creator inside of us to see problems and to create new ways to resolve those problems. And when you look throughout the history of Christianity, even though right now we kind of have this Luddite fetish where we're resistant to technology and technology is bad and get it out of my house, I don't want anything to do with it. That's kind of the normal Christian response. That hasn't always been the response historically. I mean, Paul walked on roads made by Romans. That was a new technology. There was not a road network like what existed in Rome anywhere else in the world until the time of Rome. And of course, that was used to trade slaves and to move an imperial war machine. But Paul saw the possibility of the roads, which is I can plant churches across the Mediterranean. And he walked on them. Whatever it was created for, he used them. And the same thing can be said about the printing press. The same thing can be said about radio and television with Billy Graham. These new technologies, they present incredible challenges that we do have to be serious and sober about and acknowledge. And yet on the flip side, I'm just encouraged by you and by people who are listening to this who say, you know what though? Let's walk on the road. Let's use the printing press. Let's use the radio. God's spirit isn't limited to in-person networks. He can work through digital networks.
Yeah, so good. You know, what's his name? Gutenberg was considered a heretic for creating the printing press because he put, the scribes were out of a job. And so there's several historical references to Gutenberg being the heretic for creating the thing that actually caused the, anyway. It's a well-documented in books and things, Industrial Revolution. So anyway, thank you for this conversation, Patrick. It's been solid. Yeah. We'll have to do it again, but we're going to wrap. And so for Patrick, this is Jeff with the Church Digital and Digital Church Network. Thanks for jumping on this podcast. Hey, we'll see you next time on the show. Y'all have a good day.